Okay, all right. Here we are on Chulin Daf Tzadi Tet Amud Bet. You guys have the page number at the top or no?
No.
Okay. So at the top it says Lo B'Me'ah.
Yep.
Yes. And we are starting at the two dots. So Chulin is a Masechta that is learned in all yeshivas when you're learning Hilchot Tarovet and Yoredeya, and if you're learning for Smicha, you have to learn at least part of Chulin, and these are the Dapim that you have to learn. Hence the joke about giving up smicha at the end. Not really, but that was the joke. That was a joke. So we're in the middle over here. The Mishnah that kicked us off, I'll just read to you from the Mishnah, from a few dapim beforehand. It says, Yerech shenitbashel ba'gin hanasha, im yesh ba'benot in ta'am, harei zu asura. Says that if you have a thigh that was cooked, you had the whole thigh, and it was cooked together with its gid hanasha, if the gid imparts its taste to the yerech, so that, in other words, if the gid is large enough, if there's not enough thigh to gid ratio, let's assume for now 1 to 60, that it will impart the taste, then the whole yerech is going to be asur, and the stew is probably going to be asur. That's what we're going to get to right now. So that's the context over here. We're talking about food that gets cooked with other food and how we evaluate the mixture in the end, the tarovet. So the first comment that the Gemara makes, I'm at the two dots that say ketzad misharinan. It's going to be kind of an offhand comment. Ketzad misharinan, amar avuna, kebasar baroshe lefatot. What does that mean? It just means, how do we evaluate the gid hanasha versus the rest of the meat? And the answer is that it's kiroshe lefatot. What's a lefatot? What's a lefet? Anybody know? It's a turnip. Anybody ever pulled a turnip out of the ground? Turnip? It's hard to pull out. Not very enjoyable. We did it for leket. Rashi says, Yerek shalefet, veli nira shirosh alefet matok miznavo. Basically, a lefet, the turnip, I don't know this from experience, but basically, the top of the turnip is a very strong sweet taste, and the bottom has a bland taste. What's it called? Bitter. So, the meat of the gid hanasha has to overcome taste which is equivalent to the top of the turnip. In other words, it has to be very tasty, or it has to be very large. Larger than you would expect normally. Larger than in most other cases. All right, it's kind of an offhand comment, just how we evaluate the gid. And in fact, the entire comment is going to basically be invalidated by the rest of the Gemara, and you'll see why. Matnitin delo ki hai taina, tana, the tanya, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, ein begidin menosein tam. One of the most famous statements about taroves in Chulin, this statement over here by Bishmal ben Omer, Shal B'Yochan ben Beroka, ein begidin menosein tam. A gid ultimately is what kind of body part? It's a nerve, right? It's a nerve. And basically, Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka basically just said, nerves
and they don't have taste.
Don't have any taste. And specifically, at least the gid hanasha has no taste. Okay? Now, when it has no taste, then there's no point in talking about nullifying it. It has no taste. Okay? Now, we know that the Torah says the gid hanasha is asur. We learned about it 3 weeks ago in Parshas Vayishlach. Right? But apparently, the gid hanasha does not have the power to impart taste. So there's no dispute that gid hanasha is asur midaraisa. So if you have a piece of gid, it's asur midaraisa. The challenge becomes what happens when it becomes mixed in other things. So then you have to talk about Hilchos Tarovis. But what complicates Hilchos Tarovis here is that the gid doesn't have what we usually rely on for evaluating whether or not a Tarovis is usher, which is
Nosin
Tam. Do we have another page? No, I don't think so. If you don't see one, then we don't have one. So you have to share. The gid itself doesn't have any tam. Now, what are we going to do with this? So this seems to directly contradict the Mishnah, because the Mishnah said, if when the gid is cooked with the yerech, it imparts taste to the yerech, then the yerech is going to be aser, which, according to this, doesn't apply. So that's why it says the Mishnah is not like this Tana.
The other thing is also, even if we assume that the Gid imparts taste, how do I know what it tastes like? If I taste this and I say, oh wow, this tastes like a Gid, how would I know that?
It's a great point.
It has no taste.
It's a great point.
Even if it has a taste, how do I know what it tastes like?
It's a great point, and you can use that question to ask a different question.
Same with Chazer, for example. How do I know what it tastes like?
You ask the Goy.
Good.
Uh-huh.
In other words, what did we just establish? We just established that there's a machlokas between our Mishnah and this Braita, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. And the question that you should ask, and that the Chavos Yair asks, is what kind of machlokas is this? Somebody take the Gid to an Anjum, have him taste it, and tell us what it tastes like, or if it has any taste. That's it. Are they arguing about Mitzias? Arguing about reality? Whether or not the Gid actually has Ta'am? So the Chavos Yair famously says, no, that's not what they're arguing about. They're arguing about what the threshold for Ta'am is. They both agree that Gid has a certain amount of Ta'am, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that it's a Ta'am Kalush and it doesn't count. And the Ta'am of the Mishnah says, a weak Ta'am. And the Ta'am of the Mishnah says, I agree with you that it's a Ta'am Kalush, but it still counts. That could be what they're arguing about. There are other versions of that, but that's the simplest way of trying to figure out what exactly it is that they're arguing about.
Also, are we established that the word ta'am means taste necessarily, like taste on the tongue, or could it be like its essence and imparts to me, like what it is?
Presumably, it means at the very least that if you cook it with something else, you won't taste it. Because it actually says, in begidin menosein ta'am, it doesn't impart taste. Mm-hmm. In other words, what they're saying is that if you put a gid in anything, you won't taste it.
That doesn't mean the gid doesn't have taste.
You're right, not necessarily. Taste. It could be. But that's what it definitely means that once it's arrayed with other things, in, let's say, in a liquid mixture, right, I'm being careful to say in a liquid mixture, then it doesn't actually impart taste anymore. Okay. So this just established, very interesting, that the Mishnah is not according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Now, why is this extremely important? Because as we're going to see at the end, it seems to be that we lean towards Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, which is something to keep in mind as you're learning Mishnayot. Don't try to paskin from Mishnayot, mm-hmm. which the Gemara says many times. You should never try to paskin from a Mishnah because sometimes the Mishnah is not l'halacha. Sometimes it has typos in it, which is another very interesting topic.
Typos?
Sure. Mm-hmm. All the time, the Gemara, this is something that Rav Hutner points out in his Pachad Yitzchak. He says, this is an amazing thing. Sometimes you get to a Gemara, the Gemara says, we don't understand this Mishnah. And then the Gemara says, okay, chasuri mechsera, v'hachitani. There's something missing from the Mishnah, and this is what it should say. Every student learning Gemara should get up and bang his head against the wall and say, I don't understand. If that's the case, someone go to the Mishnah, fix it, and then republish it. Why do we have Kahati Mishnayos was sitting on the wall that are just wrong? But didn't happen.
Well, like all we right. have Chikti and we have all these things also. We don't correct the
well, we do.
We have a reason why we don't want to do that because it's on the Torah.
Exactly.
And it could be that the Kriyukhti both have significance. But here, but the Gemara just says the Mishnah is wrong. The Gemara just says it's wrong. So if it just says it's to maintain the character of Torah Sheba'al Peh, that you have to learn the Gemara in order to understand the Mishnah. That's the point. You have to learn the Gemara in order to understand the Mishnah, or you have to have a tradition. The Chazal perhaps didn't want you to have an easy way out. That's what he says over there. Anyways, here's a funny story. How da'at al-kami de Rabbi Chanina, haviyate Rabbi Yehuda bar Zvina abava. So somebody came to Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yehuda bar Zvina was sitting outside at the gate to the Beit Midrash when somebody went in to speak to Rabbi Chanina. Kinafak, when the man who went to ask a shayla of Rabbi Chanina came out, Amalei, my Amalecha. What did he tell you? Basically, the context over here is that the man went in with a mixture of gidin of gidin asha with meat, and he went to ask Rabbi Chanina what the halacha was, and he said, Amalei. Shari ani halei. He said it was
okay.
Mutar. Shari, it's good. Amalei, hader aile l'kame. So Rabbi Yehuda bar Zvina said, go back in and ask him again. Yeah. That's, Einstein's famous rule.
You expect a different result, and it's the definition.
So he did get a different result. Amalman hayde kame tzarli. Zil emalei, laman diyadev abava, ein begidin menosei tab. So his other response was that Rabbi Chinen got very upset and said, why do you keep asking me this question? Go tell the person sitting outside. He knew. He knew Rabbi Yehuda Bar Zvina was sitting outside laying a trap for every person who wanted to ask him about Gidon, about the Gidon Ben Osei Tam. And he said, go outside and you tell that guy that ain't be Gidon Ben Osei Tam. And that's the halacha. When they came to Rabbi Ami, anytime anybody would come to Rabbi Ami with a shayla about Gidon Hanasha being mixed with other things, what did he do?
He sent them to
Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chaluf, the Mori Bala Hetera, because he was Matir, Bishum to Rabbi Shur ben Levi, because he held like Rabbi Shur ben Levi. Velei lo svirlei. But Rabbi Ami himself was Machmir. Rabbi Ami himself held that it was Aser, that Yesh begidim in Osein Tam. You have an amazing thing here. What's happening? Guy goes to the rabbi, says, is this mixture mutter? Rabbi Ami takes one look at it and says, I think you should go.
Go ask somebody else, yes.
This is an amazing thing, you know? There's a famous story about this from, I think it's from Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. It's about abortion, cases of abortion. You know, Shlomo Zalman was much more makil to allow a woman to have an abortion if she was bitzar. I think that was the context. If she was bitzar, whereas Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg was much more machmir. So when anybody would go to ask him the shayla, so instead of answering, he would send them to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Because he said, I'm not going to be matir you, but if he wants to be matir you, then that's fine, and I see that you need it. So that's like a modern version of this gemara.
We had one day Rav Paskin
Yeah. And the Rav of Paskin 2 days sent people to the Rav of Paskin 1 day? I'm surprised by that, because usually the people who pass in 2 days are very like, no, you have to keep 2 days. Yeah. Is that what happened though? Yeah. Is that people to the person who said one? Interesting.
This is a couple of questions. If somebody believes that this is the end,
well, emet is a tricky thing when it comes to halacha. We see that there's machlokas.
Sure,
and we don't invalidate either side of the machlokas in many cases.
But to his view, this is the right way to be, the right thing to do.
Yeah, so it tells you a little bit about the value system, I guess, in these situations, and perhaps it's very possible that Rabbi Ami would be discerning. Maybe if he was, you know, a rich person who came to him who could afford it, maybe he would be machmir in those cases and would take it upon himself. Or maybe if it was his own talmid or something like that, or his own son or his own family. Although even there, I'm not sure. I know of rabbis who are machmir on themselves, but not on their families.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. Although being machmir is a different thing. That's true. Oh well, that's yeah.
We had exactly.
Sure.
We had in London
there
as well.
Sure. Although the truth is that being machmir is a different situation.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether Rabbi Ami is machmir. Or whether he, like Yechezkel says, holds that this is the halacha. I'm not sure. You know, I can't tell.
I've got a friend with Yaakov Sharp's son, won't hold by our Eruv at all. Would we have an Eruv?
Some people don't hold by any Eruvs. I mean, I think something that may be a little bit closer, although this we're also okay with, is when you have Ashkenazim and Sephardim have different halacha. You know, for example, with an Eruv, the Eruv in Brooklyn, one of my best friends was Sephardi, and they didn't hold of the Eruv. And so he would ask me to carry things for him, and I would.
But that would be okay.
That's fine. Yeah. Well, I mean, not everybody agrees it's fine, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Aruch says it's fine. Meaning, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that if somebody has a valid, you know, halachic approach, then you can ask them to do things for you that you think are aser, that you personally would not do.
In this case, I'd say it's even more because. For you, it is mutar, because that's the shita of the Ashkenazim. Right. For him, it's asur.
Right.
So he's allowed to ask you to do something.
Whereas you're saying there's not this bifurcation over here between two different customs, but rather he just thinks the halacha is like this. Okay. Be that as it may, in the end, the Gemara establishes, v'hilchasa ein begidim in ositam. So you see, the halacha is, we paskin ein begidim in ositam. It's a little complicated to say that's the halacha, and it's clear. Whenever you say hilchasa, so the tradition is that that's written by, anybody know? So you have different tekufos, right? You have Tanakh, and then you have the Mishnah, which is written by the Tanayim, mm-hmm. right? And then you have the Gemara, which records the statements of the Amoraim. And then it was the next, who's next? So you guys all say Gaonim, right? So there's the one before that. Savaraim, right? So the tradition is that the Savaraim edited the Gemara after it was closed and added some statements. And one of the examples of the statements that they added was Hilchata. So anytime you see Hilchata, so the tradition is that comes from the time of the Savaraim. It doesn't invalidate its power. Just interesting to note that that's probably the case. Continuing, Gid Hanasha Shenit Bashel. So what do you have when you have a Gid Hanasha which gets cooked, okay, with other Gidim? Actually, you know, not even cooked, mixed up. It gets mixed up with other Gidim. All right? So now you have a Gid Hanasha with a bunch of other things that look exactly like that. You can't tell which is which. You just know that it's in there. What's the halacha? The halacha is you can't eat it. You can't eat it. Why? Because the Gid Hanasha is not going to be batel. So the Gemara says, why not? The batel baruba. When you have yavish b'yavish like this, and min b'mino especially, so then it should be bitel barov. You don't even need no same time. 1 to 1. If it's less than 49%, less than 50%, then it's mutter. If you have even one more chaticha, maybe two more chatichot, the whole thing should be mutter. You should be allowed to eat all of it. So the Gemara says, Beri Ashani. What's Beri Ashani?
A complete...
A complete object. Well, a complete object with qualifications, something that qualifies as a Beria, is never batel. Afilo be'elef lo batel. So what's the most famous Beria that we care about?
Bugs in your
food.
Bugs.
Tola'im, right? If you have a whole bug. Entire bug that's intact. Doesn't apply if you blend. Doesn't apply if you cook. But if you have like a
salad,
a strawberry, let's say, and you're worried that there might be bugs in there because you haven't checked it, so that could be a beria, and it's not batel. Even if the strawberry is 70 times bigger than the bug might actually be, it's not going to be batel. There's so much written about these two words, beria shani. We're not going to be able to go into all of it or most of it. But you should just know that there's a lot written about this.
The water in Brooklyn was an issue on that also.
Yeah, that's right. What do you say, Yo?
So if it's blended,
it's blended, so then it becomes in pieces, right? So then it's destroyed.
I don't want it.
So what's its pieces? No, you don't want it. It's an ant.
There you go.
There's an ant. There are ant legs.
The water in the
food.
Blender before you drink it.
It doesn't sound good. But there are ant legs in your food. Okay, there are ant legs in your food.
I don't
want it. Then the insect is.
The question is whether you can blend it on purpose. So this is the question I asked Rabbi Ben Arash. I don't remember if I ever got an answer. I can't remember what the answer was. Is that can you just blend fruit without checking them? Because it's a suffix whether there's anything in there anyways. Rabbi Ben Arash. There's a suffix whether there's any bugs in there anyway. You don't know. Right? So it's... The problem might be bitul chatchila. Right? What are you doing? You're cutting them up so that they become batel. Hold on, David. They're cutting them up so that they become batel. Right? So you can't cut up a bug and then put it in your food, right? If you want to do that, you can't do that. But here, you hear, you don't know whether there are bugs in there.
Some more fruit puree,
like
a puree that's made, and
they don't have to be.
But how do you know once
you don't have to be? If you have frozen strawberries, you're making a
strawberry drink.
Entire zoos in the Brooklyn.
No, but what happens if the fruit's already cut up while it's mixing in the blender, you see what do you do now?
you're looking at a bug inside the blender while it's being cut?
No, you cut it up and off.
Turn off the blender, you reach in, take out the bug,
and put the machine back
off.
Yeah.
Protein.
I had made pasta. We had a little bug infestation, and there were ants in the pot with
right.
the pasta. So
you
I went
can
up
see
to,
it.
Yeah, we could see it. So I went to the rabbi.
In the raw pasta? Yeah. Or cooked pasta?
I mean, it must have been in the raw pasta, but we saw it when it was cooking.
Uh-huh.
So I went up, we were in the same building as rabbi, so I went to the rabbi and asked, what's the halacha?
Yeah.
I wanted to know whether we had to kasher the pot. And he gave us halacha whether we could eat the pasta. I said, no, rabbi, I'm not interested in knowing whether I could eat the pasta. That's not happening. I'm going to eat the pot.
What did he say?
He said, that I even could eat the pasta.
Right.
Yeah. But
why? Because it was destroyed. Time. Why? Okay.
But the pot was certainly. I didn't have to.
Cooking is
no, if you cook it and it's whole when you put it in, then it's going to be a problem. Yeah. We'll get back to this. We'll get back to this. So that's a case of no bito, right? So that's why a gira nasha that gets cooked that gets mixed up with other things. Not that gets cooked, because it gets cooked. There's no tam, so it can't impart tam. But if it gets mixed up with other things, so then it's not going to be bato.
And it's considered a bria.
A beria. So, you know, we don't have sources on this, so I'll just give you a little bit of the rundown. What's considered a beria? So to be considered a beria, you have a few things that the Shulchan Aruch assumes that have to exist. Number one, it has to be usur mi yitzuro, I think the phrase, basically from its inception. It has to have been usur from when it was created. Right? So gira nasha ticks that box. Right? A bug ticks that box. A kosher bird does not tick that box. Right? It has to have lived. So, gira nasha covers that. Meaning, or be part of life. An insect. Apparently, or it's a machlokes, but the Shulchan Aruch paskens that chita doesn't tick that box. So plant life doesn't count for this. And it has to have been whole, to the exclusion of being chopped up. There are other things like, that it loses its name when it's subdivided. So what does that mean? So in English we have mass nouns and matter nouns, right? So, for example, water is a mass noun. You know, you divide up water, it's still water. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and rice is kind of like that as well.
Right? Whether you say how much or how many?
Split rice, you still have rice. What?
Whether you say how much or how many?
Yeah, pretty much. A piece of chicken, right? A piece of chicken is a matter noun. You cut up a piece of chicken, you have two pieces of chicken. Right? So if it's a, it has to be a matter noun. It has to be the kind of thing that if you cut it up, then it's two pieces of that object and not just, I don't know, two waters. Right? Exactly. So those are the qualifications for being considered a beria. This has a halachic ramifications for things like, see, a beria. So let's say, for example, for if you eat iser, right? So shiurim apply to basically to mass nouns, but to matter nouns they don't. So if you eat even a single bug, even if it's not a shiur, it's not a kazayas, right? Most bugs are not a kazayas. You violated an iser. That's a beria. So and it comes up in other places as well. Okay. Continue the Gemara. V'chein chaticha shel nevela. Interestingly, over here, this nevela is talking about it's just any piece of usur food, usur meat or fish, even a piece of that food that gets mixed up with other pieces. Okay, gets mixed up with other pieces or cooked together with other kosher pieces, so it does not get nullified. Even if it's of the same type. So you take a piece of, kosher pig meat and take a piece of meat. Take a piece of meat and other meat and a kosher meat that tastes the same and you mix it together. So theoretically, the Gemara points out it should be batel berov. Gemara says, tibatel beruba. Should be batel berov, like other min bimino. So the answer is, hani chalaman damar kol shadar kol imanos. Shaninu. Okay, so you have a Mishnah in Orla which describes something called Kol Shadar Kol Imanos. What's Kol Shadar Kol Imanos? Imanos is to count, right? Timne, to count. So you have objects which, when you buy them by their number. And then you have other objects that, when you buy them by weight. Okay. So there are some objects that you always buy them by number, and then there's some objects that you always buy them by weight. Okay? So when it says, kol shadarko limanos, so that is actually more expansive. That means anything that, let me just make sure that I'm reading this right. Yeah, anything that can, let me do it the opposite way. Et shadar kol imanos is restrictive. It means things that are always sold by number. Those things are not batel when you mix them up with other things. and things that anything else can be batal. But there's another reading of the Mishnah. There's another girsa, another version of the Mishnah, which is kol shadar galimanos, which is more expansive, which means anything that can be sold by number. So that means that there are some objects which are sometimes sold by weight and sometimes sold by number. For example, chicken, pieces of chicken, right? You go to a supermarket and you're going to pay for the chicken by?
By weight.
By weight. You go to a cafeteria, right? And you pick up, you have your meal and you want chicken, so you can take one piece of chicken. You can only take one piece of chicken. You can't take a piece of chicken and then add on a little bit more for weight or reduce it a little bit for weight. They sell you one piece of chicken. So sometimes chicken is by weight, sometimes chicken is by number. So if you say kol shadarkali manos shaninu, so then it's very expensive. It could be referring to even pieces of novella. And that thing is not going to be, it's not batel because it's darkali manos. It has extra significance because it's sold by number, so which means that we assign a value to pieces every single individual piece.
Pieces of novella are sold by number?
It can be sold by number.
It can be, okay.
And according to the version of kol shadar kalimanos, that's good enough to make it not be batal. However, according to the version of et shadar kalimanos, things that are exclusively sold by number, it's not. So it should be batal. So the Gemara has to find another way of explaining why it's not batal. And so it introduces another concept, shani chaticha holo veruya lehiskabed bo lifnei ha'orchim. There is such a thing as chaticha ruli iskabed, which is since it's if you have a piece that is large enough, even a piece that gets sold normally by weight, but a piece that is large enough and basically a serving size piece. You know, you take a piece of turkey, right? You take a whole turkey and you cut it into chunks, and then you display it on a platter. And then I say to Yecheskel, do you want some turkey? And I take one piece of turkey off of there and I put it on the plate. And since Yecheskel eats turkey, he eats that. So that one piece is considered a chaticha haru'uya lehiskabed. And that's not going to be batel. So if you have like tiny little pieces, I guess, you have tiny little pieces, so then those will be batel. But you have a nice, there's again a discussion about what qualifies as chaticha ruli iskabed. We don't have time to get into it. But something that you would serve to a guest as a slice, that's not going to be batel. Which is pretty broad, right? But that's how we paskin. Now the Gemara ends and says, you know, we've been talking a lot about different kinds of objects that are not going to be batel. Why are we talking about all? Why did the Mishnah mention all these different ones? Utzricha diashminen gid mishum deberia hi abachaticha emalo biashminen chaticha hol veruli iskabed balifnei orchem abagid emalo. Utzricha says we had to mention both beria gid is asar because it's a beria. Gid is not batel because it's a beria. That has to be mentioned, and a chaticha of nevela is not batel because it's a chaticha ruli iskabed. That has to be mentioned for its own reason. You wouldn't know one without the other. The Gemara seems to be just saying that a beria doesn't tell you anything about chaticha ruli iskabed and vice versa. Okay? Now, the next part of the Gemara will take us all the way far afield. It introduces the concept of chaticha naaseit nevela. What's the acronym for that? Chanan. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't, whatever. It's a famous concept of Tarovis. We don't have time to learn this part of the Gemara because it's going to take us all the way to the moon and back. And we don't have time for that. And there's plenty to talk about just on what we've learned so far. So let's check the source sheets.
Okay.
We have essentially two sugyas that I wanted to go through. One is the Isser of Gidon Nasha, and the other one is Bitol Yavish B'Yavish, which is as close to Smicha as we're going to get, the second one, in terms of general knowledge that everybody needs to have in order to become a rabbi. Okay, Isser Gidon Nasha. So take a look at Tosfos, Hilchasa on the bottom. Hilchasa on the bottom of our Gemara. Take a look at that. There's two of them. I have to figure out which one it is. I believe it is...
Well, the bottom one we can't see.
I believe it is... You can't see the bottom one?
The very bottom line, I can't see.
Okay. Okay. All right, so we'll get back to that. So we'll do the top one. Yeah, good. Hilchasa, we get the most time. At the end of the day, we paskin, gid has no tam. So, tam gid anasha, gid anasha, aser bahana'a. What's the status of an actual gid anasha? You're holding a gid anasha in your hand. What can you do with it? You certainly can't eat it, right? What can you do with it? So Tosfos introduces the idea that you're not allowed to get any hana from it. Now, what other hana can you get from it besides eating?
I can feed it. I can feed it to my dog.
You can feed it to your you can feed it to your dog, or you could sell it, right? Mm-hmm. So take a look. Now, would you sell a non-Jew just to get a nasha?
Why not?
Is that helpful?
Buy it,
no. Did he buy it from you?
Probably not.
Probably not, right? So Tosfos says, "Hachi mefarish perek kol sha." So he explains the Gemara Sachim, the parak of Rabbi Abba, the Amar Kol Makom Shenam Alot Tochlu, Mashmanami Iser Hana. Okay, well, this is going to take us into the actual Zogia, where Tosfos talks about where we get this from. Rabbi Abba says in Pesachim that whenever the Torah says Lo Tochlu, the Torah says do not eat Lo Tochlu, that actually also includes don't get Hana. Uh-huh. It also includes that. Mashmanami is her hana. Now, it's a machlok is over there. Uparich v'hare gid. But the Gemara says, but wait, but there's a gid. The Torah says, you're not allowed to eat a gid, but you are allowed to get hana. So, umishani keshehutra nevela hi v'gida hutra. So it says, no. If you have a nevela with the gid, so that's why it's mutter. Umasik delamandamar ein begidim inositam hachinami de aser. Then it really is. If it has no tam, then it really is aser even b'hana. That's what he claims. Nikur basulov dikochavim. Guys didn't say this.
Nikur.
What's nikur?
That's removing it. Then.
That's removing the ginanasha. What happens if you don't remove the ginanasha? Then the ginanasha is in the meat, right? And then what do? You sell it. Which means, what are you doing? You're selling the ginanasha. That's how you sell the ginanasha.
Yeah, but if it's negligible, that's not adding to the value.
I can sell that to a Jew also, and assume that he's not going to eat that part of the meat. I mean, if I sell you a cow knowing that you're going to shech this cow, am I responsible to worry whether you're going to eat the
ganasha? This is not an issue of the favor. This is an issue of you're basically selling something that's aser b'hana to a non-Jew. You're making money off of it.
Are you getting more money out of the deal because the ghee is included?
I don't know. It's in the way. So Tosa says, he says, don't worry about that. Ain li tmo ma shmo khani ka bazal of dikhavim af bi shmo ur bo gid de ovid kokhav de ovid kokhav ain no noten ma aus ela adav shesh bo tam, cuz the reality is that the non-Jew only pays for things that have taste, and if it doesn't have taste, he's not paying for it. Velo agid and not of the gid. Now it's interesting because one of the tricks that sometimes butchers might do is they freeze the meat, which freezes the water on the meat, which makes the meat way more. It keeps the water in there, which is stealing, because they're basically selling meat with saturated with water, which makes it
heavier,
way more. So you pay by weight. So the ginanasha does weigh something. It doesn't matter that the non-Jew is not paying for the taste of the ginanasha; he's paying for the weight. I don't know how much it adds to the weight. I have no idea. Anyways, the Tosfos ends and says, "Umiu yerech shlema asur lishloach lovid kochavim." So he says, if you're going to cut it up and sell it to the non-Jew, then that's fine, because he's not paying for the ginanasha. However, if you're going to sell it to him without pulling it out, then you do have a problem, because now he's buying it from you whole. He's buying it from you whole with the gid intact, because he doesn't want it to be cut at all. He wants a nice, big, round piece of meat. So,
What if you say to the goy, I want to sell to you this gid, this whole meat. I don't want to include the gid, so pay me for the amount minus the gid. It's like a delo nichile. We don't want it. It's not supposed to be.
Theory that could work. I think in theory that could work. The last point he makes is he quotes the Mishnah that says shalech adam yarach leovid kochavim. The Mishnah says you're allowed to send the hindquarters to the ovid kochavim. Doesn't say anything about taking anything out. That's established not like Rabbi Shimon, and yesh begid minosin tam, in which case it's not aser b'hana. Don't have to worry about all the ins and out, all the algebra, but basically he says that's not lahalacha. That Mishnah is not lahalacha. Right, so let's go to the source sheet. What? The one that says that you can sell the hide quarter ready. Like
Aren't there restaurants now that say this meat is kosher? It's on the menu. This meat is kosher for those who eat the hind quarter.
There are. We'll get to that. Will we get to that? I don't know if we'll get to that. I experienced that. I guess I'll have. But basically, the story with that is that the Sephardim, Beis Yosef meat in Eretz Yisrael, can be sold, the hindquarters are sold as Beis Yosef meat because they do Nikor Agid. Ashkenazim, for the last 100 or so years, depending on where in the world they lived, did not do Nikor Agid, merely because meat was so plentiful that they didn't have to. And so it was more cost efficient to just sell it to the non-Jew.
It was also difficult to do.
It was difficult, but they knew how to do it. You know how I know that Ashkenazim know how to do it? Because there's a Yiddish word for it.
Treibern.
Yeah. Why would there be a Yiddish word for something that you don't know how to do? The fact is they did do it. They did do it. They stopped. And in fact, they even did it in Israel. My father-in-law said that his father used to do it.
He was a butcher, right?
Yeah. There's a story, but in Israel as well. Yeah, and his father did it in Israel.
My mom used to do it.
Yeah, and that was 7 years ago, something like that. So it was done, but nowadays Ashkenazim don't do it. So someone asked for Moshe, he wanted to start a business where he was doing it for Ashkenazim. He wanted to sell the meat. He said, I can get treibern meat, and I want to sell it. So Moshe writes in the Tshuva, you have to read it carefully. He says, the minhag to not eat the hindquarters for Ashkenazim is not a chumrah. It's a minhag. It's not a chumrah because there's a problem with eating the hindquarter. It's a minhag that developed because it was more worth it to sell it. So we just don't do it. That's the minhag. We don't do it. Which means that you don't have to worry about eating it, but you shouldn't start a business that sells it. So he said, you shouldn't start a business like that. So when I was in... Lechem Basar in Herzliya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Either
for the first time ever, I saw on the menu, it said, you know, there were like five, there were five main courses, and two of them said, Le'ochle chalakim achareyim levad. I noticed what's going on. What's happening? It's a Mahadran Beis Yosef restaurant. And then I figured it out. Oh, it's a Mahadran Beis Yosef restaurant. It's Beis Yosef. So they have... the hindquarters, and I had never had filet mignon before, I guess. I just didn't know that I never had filet mignon before. So I called my Rebbe to ask him what I should do. It was a date, so Sonia wasn't happy. But we wanted to know if we could eat it or not. So
what did your Rebbe say?
So he said, he looked up Rav Moshe. He said, it seems like Rav Moshe says that you shouldn't, unless it's Shas Adchak. So he's like, is this a Shas Adchak? I said, well, there's three other entrees, so I guess we can forego it for now. But then I looked up the Rav Moshe myself afterwards, and I read it carefully, and I called him my Rabbi. I said, I don't think that's what Rav Moshe says. I think he says that you can eat it. And I convinced him that that's what he was saying.
I don't understand why there would be a chashash that you can't.
Because Ashkenazim don't eat filet mignon.
Because of the financial consideration.
So most people don't know all the history. And when you just look at Rav Moshe says that he can't start the business. So... basically, you're good. I mean, look, at the end of the day, people who are really makbid on kashrus won't eat it. Why? In other words, you take a standard Haredi in Bnei Brak, he'll never have filet mignon for a very simple reason. Because he doesn't hold of Beis Yosef, but that's Beis Yosef, the kashrus organization, right? Because it's perceived as not being the most careful. And all the other badatsim are Ashkenaz. So they're not going to actually put a hechsher on filet mignon because they're shoftim, whatever, they don't. So,
but by now, why don't they? Like, why in Israel wouldn't they? Certified organization.
I don't know. I
have to share the wrong topic.
What?
Nobody wants to be the first one to rock the boat.
Filet mignon on the menu. Double the numbers.
I've given a share on that. Okay, you're right.
First, and
now, let's continue. Let's continue.
You just have to taste it first.
Okay, let's continue. So, take a look at the rush. The Rush says, now remember what we just saw. Tosa says that they're Aser Bahana, that the Gidon Hashem is Aser Bahana. So the Rush on the sheet says, Kasav Rambam, the Gidon Hashem Mutar Bahana. Rambam disagrees, the Rambam says explicitly that Gidon Hashem is Mutar Bahana. Well, we're not going to read all of this. Chachmi Lunil, that's the Bali Tosos basically. Heshivo Dvarav Oni with the Aser Bahana. We won't read all of the ins and outs.
What does Lunil stand for?
It's a place in France, no?
It looks like a Russia table.
No,
that's what it looks like. That's where it's got the UV.
No, it's France.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they do that. Rashi, whenever you translate, he gives the French word.
But the apostrophe sign.
Yeah. Yeah. No. As far as I know, this is
like the Rashi Tivot.
No. As far as I know, it's just a place in France.
Okay.
So we'll jump all the way to the end. Jump all the way to the end. Ra'iti ba'ashkenaz shemochrim gidanash le'ovid kochavim. I saw in Ashkenaz, Germany, that they were selling gidanash le'ovid kochavim. U'b'shar aratzos ra'iti shen nizuru af lehachilo lechatul. Okay, diktati bo. V'nira shemuter banu. So basically he just said, in Arzos Ashkenaz, in the Ashkenaz lands. Now keep in mind, where's the Rush? So the Rush is a very interesting character because he came from Ashkenaz.
But he lived in Spain.
And then he moved to Spain because of the Crusades. His two colleagues, the Mordechai and Maharami Ruttenberg, suffered greatly and he ran away. Barcelona, as far as I remember. Not sure. And so basically he was an interface between Ashkenaz and Sephardim. One of the first.
Right? He was an Ashkenazi who lived among Sephardim.
Exactly. So he had both. And then he gave birth to the Torah. The Torah was the first one to really codify and combine, in halachic terms, Ashkenazi and Sephardi deos. And here's the tour. B'shnei gidin, hein b'yerech echad p'nimi, samuch la'etzim, v'asheni chitzon, samuch la'batzer, u'shneim asurin, v'tzarech lechatet achariheim. You have to cut them out. B'shumnam, we didn't do this. So the tosas at the bottom, this is a separate machlokas, tosas at the bottom that you can't see. So tosas over there quotes Rashi. Rashi says that the shuman, that's the fat, that or the oil or the fat, that is around the gid. Okay? So the Gemara says that is usur. And that is usur midrabanan. Shema, you might come to eat the gid. Now, what's the status of that shuman? Because that shuman.
That's a ghetto.
Definitely has taste. So now, what do we say about the shuman? Is the shuman going to impart isur if you cook it? In other words, let's take the case again. You took a yerech, right? And you cooked it with the gid. And the gid has some shuman around it.
Shuman.
Now what? Maybe the gid doesn't have ta'am, but the shuman does, and the shuman is usur, like the gid. So what do we do?
We can do this ad infinitum. Touching that.
Yeah, but no, but the point over here is that the shuman is only usur because it's defined as shuman hagidanasha. The shuman is not usur in and of itself, and it's not usur because the gid imparts taste into it. The shuman is usur only to make sure that you don't eat the gid. But the shuman has taste.
In which case it would seem that it shouldn't impart.
Why not?
Some concept from the isur and isur.
Well, oh, you mean like a gzera the gzera? I'm not sure. Not really, I mean, okay. Can anybody think of another reason why it shouldn't be a problem? So Rashi says it's a problem. Rashi says the shuman is a problem. If you cook it with the shuman, then you're in trouble, because it imparts taste. The Rivam, one of the Balei Tosfos, he says it's not. Why? Because how could the shuman be more powerful than the gid? The only reason the shuman is usher is because of the gid. But the gid can't make things other things usher. So how could the shuman make other things usher? Even though it imparts taste,
yeah,
the Rivam says it can't be more powerful than the gid.
The only reason why the gid doesn't is because it doesn't have taste. That's the vote.
So the Rivam says you can't have the shuman hagid be more dangerous, halachically, than the gid itself. That's what he claims. That's the Rivam says. But how does the Tur paskin? So the Tur says, "V'shumnam aser, v'fishi yisro kadoshim hemenagu bo aser, v'gufo shogin eno ela ke'et she'en botam, v'hafal pikin aser tatora, alkein eno oser ta'ruv aso v'pleitaso." It doesn't aser things when it gets cooked with them. V'knognos, v'shuman yesh ben tam, v'fichach osrin ta'ruv aso v'pleitaso. He passes like Rashi, that the shuman does make things aser against the Rivam. V'yesh osrin aso b'hana'a, Rambam he tiro, v'lazeh he skim Adoni Avi Harush, v'fichach shalech Adam lenochri yarech shegid anasha b'tocha ach b'shemachzik lo tova b'shvil agid. So the Torah passes like that. Rabbi Asher, somewhat unsurprisingly, his father, it says that you're allowed to sell an entire yarech to a non-Jew, including the gid hanasha. Okay.
And then when they take the nerve out, they take the fat out as well. Is the fat still considered asur? It was
When a Jew takes out the
when
the
they try birth,
you have to of take course, the fat with it as well.
Yeah, because the fat's usher. Yeah.
Not so easy to define that. The nerve is very definable.
Yeah.
Also, when you take it out,
you have to cut a section. Out, you have to cut out a section. Yeah. Okay. Now, so the Beis Yosef. This is very interesting. The Beis Yosef quotes all of this. Rav Yosef Karo, writing on the Torah. This is commentary on the Torah. We know Rabbi Yosef Karo for the Shulchan Aruch, but he also wrote a book called the Beis Yosef, which he wrote before the Shulchan Aruch, which is one of the most monumental works in halacha ever, because he brings everything together. So let's just jump to the end. Okay, we'll skip most of the beginning, where he just makes some somewhat picayune points about the Rambam and the Rush. But the end, Umiru b'sefer Zohar parshas vayishlach nira she'agid aser b'hana v'lachein tov lizayr. So the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and his Beis Yosef says, the Zohar seems to say that the Gid Anasha is Aser Bahana'a, and therefore it's good to be careful about it. Interesting. So he quotes the Zohar to say that you should be careful about it.
Again,
how often?
Sorry,
go ahead. How often do we quote the Zohar for halacha?
The Beis Yosef? Somewhat often.
Yes?
Yeah. Especially the Beis Yosef, sure. Maybe not against the Gemara, but here we don't know what the Gemara says. Yes, and then he said we should be concerned for the Zohar. However, the sources who say that we shouldn't be concerned for the Zohar, they're okay because they'll say the Gemara is against the Zohar and the Gemara wins. But here we don't have that. The Gemara doesn't tell us whether or not the Gid Hanasha is Aser Bahana, and the different Rishonim have different Rayos. The Zohar is clear. The Zohar says that it's Aser Bahana. So the Beis Yosef says you should be careful. Now, don't worry about this. Hold on.
There's something catching my eye about the language here. He quotes the Zohar as saying it's Asur Bahana, but he doesn't say therefore it's Asur. He says,
you're right.
Therefore, totally Zahir.
You're right. You're right. And
he should say, therefore, it's Asur.
It gets worse. Don't worry. It gets worse. It gets worse before it gets better.
You know, it seems...
So it gets worse before it gets better. But this is actually my favorite part. My favorite part isn't what the Beis Yosef says. It's actually what the Ramah says in response. So the Ramah, you know, so we only know the Ramah from the Shulchan Aruch, right? But just like we know only Rav Yosef Karo from the Shulchan Aruch. So Rav Yosef Karo wrote the Beis Yosef. The Ramah also wrote something. He wrote the Darkei Moshe, which is on the tour. They both wrote, you know, at the same time, they basically were writing parallel books. Part of the interesting part of the history. So the Darkei Moshe HaKatzar, take a look at what he says. I love this. Ve'eini mevin dvarav. I don't understand the Beis Yosef. Ki shamati ki baal sefer hazohar hu stam Rabbi Shimon, hamuzkar b'talmud, Shehu Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Who's the author of the Zohar?
Rabbi
Shimon ben Yochai. Who's the one who said, Ein begidim benosin tam, upon which we are relying for most of this? Rabbi Shimon. V'hapalig yimo b'talmud shalana, Rabbi Yehuda u'matir b'hanav, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, halachik Rabbi Yehuda, k'moshe k'asav ha-poskim, v'im k'in, in ra'yim b'sefer ha-zohar le'in in hochas ha-kein ne'erli. The Rama claims that since Rabbi Shimon is the man who says that it's asur b'hanav, and we pass like Rabbi Yehuda over Rabbi Shimon, no problem, we don't pass like the Zohar. Yeah, of course the Zohar says that. He would. Right? But we don't pass like that. The problem is that when we really showed him, it's the exact opposite. The ones who bring Rabbi Shimon, for example, the Rambam paskins that Ein Megiddim Eino Sein Ta'am, which is Rabbi Shimon, and he also paskins that it's not Asur B'Hana. So it kind of falls apart, but I just love the maxi on the Ramah to basically say, yeah, of course the Zohar says that, but the Zohar is wrong because we don't paskin that way. All right. Now, as my father pointed out, the Beis Yosef says the Zohar disagrees and says that it's Asur Bahana, V'chein Tov Lizar. However, when you look in the Shulchan Aruch, I have three seifim over here. Number one. Gufo shel ged eino ela ke'eid shein bo ta'am v'af ha'pikin asar Torah v'fichach eino oser taruvas v'pleitaso v'aknoknos v'ashuman yesh behem ta'am v'fichach oser taruvas v'pleitaso. That was the first machlokes that we saw.
What is that haknot?
I don't know. But the shuman is aser and is oser. That's the first machlokes that we had. The Shulchan Aruch passes like Rashi. Ged eino ashe mutter b'hana. So whereas in the Beis Yosef he said v'chein tov lizayir, at the end of the day, in his Shulchan Aruch, he says it's mutter.
So when he says totally azar, he says it's a chumrah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Finally, shaleach adam lenachri yarech v'gin anasha b'tocha ben shleim v'min chatucha v'chein aminag. V'chein aminag to sell to the non-Jews the untrabered, uncut flanks of cows. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. I brought one other source in this sugya, because it's just a fascinating source for you to all know. Come Pesach time, all right? Come Pesach time, you bring this up at the table. Rambam says as follows in Korban Pesach: Kshadamo chelas a Pesach chotech abasar Va'ochel v'chozecha atzamas bin haperek u'mefarkan imratza. When a person eats the Pesach, he can cut the meat, and then he can cut the in between the bones. U'ksheagia l'gid anasha motzi'o u'menicho. And then when he finally gets to the gid anasha, he puts it to the side. Imshar ha'gidim ha'atzamas v'akroma shi'o to b'shas ha'gidim. She'ein menakin oto k'shar ha'basar. V'chatzpun oto elet solin oto shalem. How do you cook the the Korban Pesach?
You roast it on an open fire.
On a spit, right? On a wooden spit. Uncut. And you don't chamber it beforehand because you're going to end up breaking bones, right? Vim chatcho chatichot chatichos kasher v'hu shelo yachzor eiver tzarech adam lishtadol shelo yashem yibasar Pesach. Okay, fine. So that's what he says. But what did the Rambam just say? He just said that you cook the entire thing together and then when you get to the Gidanashi you throw that out. But what's the problem here? What about the Shuman? What about the Shuman? It imparts taste. Now the Rambam doesn't paskin that the Shuman is not a problem. He says that it is a problem. So how do we get around this? The Ravid has the best line on the Rambam. The Ravid has a lot of good lines on the Rambam, okay? Whenever you look up a Ravid when he argues with the Rambam, it's always going to be fun. This is one of the funner ones. On the opposite side of the page, it says, Asagas HaRavid at the top. Shadam ochel at Pesach. You do.
Where does it say?
In the second line. Asagas HaRavid, Kishadam ochel at Pesach. That's the quote from the Rambam. Amar Avraham, that's the Ravid. B'chayei roshi ein iser gadol mizeh. She yitzle ha-pesach im gid ha-nashe. It's almost bad as chametz. You're going to cook the gid ha-nashe inside the korban pesach? V'im shemano, v'im tarba, d'tute matana, v'im kromo, sheberosh. All the other things also that are problematic? V'im ezke, v'ochel pesach. If I one day get to eat the korban pesach, v'afi lefanai kazeh, hayiti chofto b'karka lefanav. I would smash it on the ground like a ravos on Hoshana Rabbah in front of his face, and I would throw it away and not eat it. Now, the chances of the Ravid being included in the Rambam's Chabura are actually pretty good, I would say, I guess. But he said he would not eat the Korban Pesach of the Rambam.
Well, what does he want to
have? He wants him to cut it out. He wants him to cut it out.
Cut it out before you roast it.
Yeah, and risk breaking the bones, but getting be
risk
careful.
Breaking your bones.
Be careful not to break the bones.
Practicalities of mandra on that day, in those few hours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's thousands. Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
It's not a quick process.
Well, there don't have to be thousands. Everybody just needs a kazayis. Okay. It's going to be a lot. Now, what's the explanation for the Rambam, though? How do we explain the Rambam? How are you going to eat with the Shemen? With the Shuman? So the Keshe Mishnah, again, Rabbi Yosef Karo. So he quotes the problem, and in the underlined part, he says, "Ushmano she'ein bo iser ela she Yisrael kadoshim nagu bo iser, u'bepesach lo nagu kidei shelo yavo lachatech bo ever." So Rabbi Yosef Karo claims that the Shuman of the Gid is a special kind of iser. It's not like an iser d'rabbanan, like a classic iser d'rabbanan. This is nagu bo Yisrael iser. The rabbis didn't make this one up. The Jews did. They said, we want to be careful about not eating the Ginanasha, so we're going to make sure that we don't even eat the Shuman of the Ginanasha. Do you mind anybody have any other statements? In
Glad kosher?
Okay, maybe. There's a Mizera's statement about Nida. The Gemara says that Benos Yisrael, Hichmiru al Atzman, that even a tipa kechardal, that even a tiny, tiny little bit of blood will cause Nida. The rabbis didn't say that. The women did. Rav Gustman uses this in his Shiurim and Kiddushin, uses this Rav Yosef Karo, that when there's a mitzvah that conflicts with a minhag Yisrael that started, that the rabbis didn't make up, it's not like a gzeir or an isidor or anything like that, the mitzvah overrides the minhag Yisrael. So the Rambam says, yes, 353 days a year, we don't eat the Shuman again. But on Erev Pesach, we have no option. Minhag Yisrael doesn't violate a mitzvah. Very interesting.
He doesn't say to eat. He says you cut around it. You're allowed to cook it with it.
You're not allowed to eat the gid
or the shuman
or the shuman if you get there, right? But you can cook it together. All right. That's it.
Practicality. How far down the nerve is Asur?
I honestly have no idea. You have to get a book that with the pictures, cool and illuminated. Maybe next time.
When you're cutting your
difficult.
So, here's the big sugya, all right? The big sugya. This is one that it's not as hard as it sounds at the beginning, but you get this and it's like a nice cornerstone when it comes to Hilchos Tarbos. Bitl yavish b'yavish, or I should really say min b'mino yavish b'yavish. When you have different pieces together, it doesn't have to be yavish b'yavish. Min b'mino. You have different pieces together that get cooked together, and then you have distinct pieces. All right, you have 10 pieces of meat. 9 of them are kosher. One of them is not. Okay, but they're all the same type of meat. In other words, they all taste the same. What do you do? So, we said that if it's a beria, then nothing's batel. You can't eat any of it. If it's reulis kabed, you can't eat it. If it's kedei limanos, you can't eat it. What if it's none of those? What if it's just small pieces of chicken? Pieces of chicken that get... chicken. Okay, treif chicken and kosher chicken that get mixed up together. And you know that there's treif chicken in there, but it's less than 50%.
Eat it.
Eat what?
You can have whatever you want.
All of it. All of it. Even though you know that you're eating, at any given point in time, the piece that you're picking up right now could be an entirely treif piece of chicken. 100% treif.
You've got a 49% chance that it's treif.
Okay. Yeah, possibly.
It's not lovery, this thing.
Possibly. There are four different positions on this case. Okay? We're going to go from Mehakal Ela Kavid. Okay? Kal Ela Machmir. Ready? All right, hold on. So the first shita is the Rush. The Rush is the most makel shita. I'll make it easy for you just to keep it in your mind easy. The first is the most makel. B'kal duchta achel b'zvachim parich of libatel beruba. Every time it asks about libatel beruba, there should be batel beruba. V'lashim bitel mashma heter gamor. Ki'isur habatel b'shishim o b'meya. Just like when something becomes batel b'shishim, you can eat the entire mixture. Hilkach nira diimbashal shloshtan ke'achar o bishlanim chatichot acherot. Da'kol mutar. V'lo min enihid kol zman shu yaveshu batel b'rov. Mikol mekom kishabishlu niflat tamov oser. De'lo matina davar hamutar lachlo shehet sira oser. Don't worry about that part. Acharei shehutur b'yavesh v'nehapach ha'isur lihiyot heter. The asur becomes mutar. Shuv einu chozer lehasar ayde bishul. It doesn't then become asur again when you start cooking it. Vav agav demin bemino osur ad shishim. Okay, we'll stop there. People like to throw around a phrase. I've heard it many, many times. Halachic reality. Have you heard this phrase? That, mm-hmm. You've never heard it? You know, there's a halachic reality over here. People like to use it all the time when it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. This is one of those times when it makes 100% sense. This is what the Rosh is saying. He's saying, I know that 49% of the pieces in this mixture are aser, midaraita, they're treif. And I know that anytime I pick up a piece, there's a 49% chance. Not only can I eat each one of those pieces, the Rush says,
eat all of them.
I can eat all of them, and not only can I eat all of them, I can eat all of them at once. Even though they're distinct pieces, I can take the whole thing and just go right into my mouth, even though I know that I'm eating 49% Isser right now.
Does this work with Yevin? Not in Lechachila?
No. So that's better Lechachila. You can just go with all of it, according to the Rush. Heter, Nepach, Isser, Nepach, Leheter. Those pieces that were treif, I don't know where they are, so I can identify them, obviously. They not only are not going to be a problem, they are now mutter. That's the Rush. Okay? Shita achat. Second shita is the Rashba, and it's safe for Torah Sabayis. Torah Sabayis is on all of your day, or actually not on all of your day, but on most of your day. It's a bunch of essays by the Rashba. So he says, Chatichas nevela sheinu reili skabed ba'al yifnei orchim, shenis arva ba'acheros, v'chein kol shar yisurim shenis arv yavish b'yavish, b'telin afilo achad, betoch shnayim, v'afilo iser shal divayim ein kan. There's no iser do abanan even. V'hikilo b'davar zela fisher kol echad omeid ba'atzmo, v'ochel kol echad b'yifnei atzmo, v'kevet shenis ba'ata b'roz, v'ar Torah, v'ein kan iser shal Torah, k'sh'ochel ha'echad, ani omer zeho shal heter, v'chein b'kulam. The Rashba says something different. The Rashba says, Rashba agrees that I can also, he says, I can eat all of the pieces. However, I have to eat them one at a time. Why? Because every time I pick one up, I say, this one, This one's not the Aser one. This one's Mutter. Then I pick another one up. I say, this one, this one's not Aser. This one's Mutter. And I eat that
Until
I get to the last one, and I say, this one, this one's Mutter. The Aser one, I already ate.
But if you shove it all into your mouth,
no,
you know for sure that something there is Aser.
That's right. The Svara that he says is on each single one, there's a 49%, there's a 51% chance that it's Mutter. And therefore, I'm going to have to eat each one. But I can't eat all of them because there's a 100% chance that I'm eating Aser. That's the Rashba.
But the concept of the Batel B'Shishim doesn't come in here at all. Right?
No, not at all.
You mentioned it before, right.
Now, the next sheet is Tosas Beria. I'll read it to you. It's actually on the Gemara. The Gemara says, Beria Shani. It's on the top of, if you want to look at it, it's on the top of the Gemara, on the second page. Beria Shani va'afilu be'alaf lo'batla, v'chein chatich ha'ruri l'skabi lo'batla, k'damar ha'cha, v'heicha d'pir ishchad minayu nami aser gzera shem yikach minah kabua, k'even she'en eser nikar, k'dabir shesleam. V'damar she'enu shel Beria. Lo Beria v'lo chatich ha'ruri l'skabi. That's our case. If it's neither one. Vata berov vafilu iser midrabanan leika kedemash mahacha umiu shem alachad gavra haya aser. So Tosa says all of the pieces can be eaten, however, not by one person. Now I don't know if he means that a different person has to eat every piece, or if he just means that one person has to eat 99 pieces and another person has to eat 100. But basically, he says no one person can eat all the pieces. Also, why? Because you're not for sure. Each one is going to say, you ate the Aser piece, and I ate the Aser. You can have one person eat all of it, because then he definitely ate Iser. Right? According to the Rashba, did I eat Iser? For sure. 100% catch it. Overall, 100% I ate Iser.
Yeah, but each decision...
Right, the Tosfos told us 100% somebody ate Iser.
Tosfos need more than one person in the number of people of the number of Iser pieces.
Maybe. I don't know. It could be. It could be that they say that. I didn't look into it.
Say that again?
Having three pieces out of 10, and you'd need 3 out of 10 people.
So that in theory you could say that this person ate one. Well, you need 4, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
One person.
Yeah. Last sheet is the most machmir. That's Rashi. So Rashi's not here. It's in Maseches Avodah Zarah. Rashi says, "Tarte eat le'idavah shemini v'isar yana diika tarte lechashivus adachashiv iser didu hu delo batel aval chametz prusa v'pesach ho ve'idarka limonas batel u'mashlich echad mihen l'nahar." That's the part. "Mashlich echad mihen l'nahar v'ashar nosin l'klavo v'chatikas nevela aval gav the davah shemini nu." Basically, Rashi says one person can eat all the pieces except for one. He has to leave one piece over and say, this one is designated as Iser, and put it to the side. Rashi is the only one who has not 100% chance that somebody is eating Iser. He's the only one. I don't know what the chances are, but at least Rashi says that we're going to at least put one to the side and say, we're designating that as the Iser piece, and there's a chance that I didn't do anything wrong, that nobody did anything wrong. According to the other Shishitos, somebody did something wrong.
Which means even if there are a bunch of people eating, the crowd that's eating it has to leave one piece on the plate and not eat it.
Yeah. So how does this...
How come that it could be decided this way?
What
if
do you
they
mean?
Knew that somebody was doing something wrong? I probably missed something.
Well, I mean, I was being facetious when I said wrong. Because as we said, we're talking what the halacha is. So the Rush says, let's just go over the shittas again. So the Rush says that one person can eat all of it all at once. That's the most surprising one, right? Because there it's clear that you're doing something wrong.
I understood all the shittot, but I don't understand how you can...
So each one has its svara. Each one has its svara. So the Rush says that bittel is bittel. Just like we don't worry about the fact that there was a pig in the soup, because there's 60 times soup to the pig, and I am definitely eating more than a kazayis of pig if I eat the whole soup. I eat the whole soup. I drink the whole soup. And there was a piece of pig in there. It was chaticha. There was a kazayis of pig in there. I definitely had pig. But it doesn't surprise you that that's okay, does it?
Yeah, but it's another relationship here. It's another percentage, and it's...
Why? Because I'm actually tasting
it. It's a clear b'diavad.
It is a b'diyabad. Every bittel is b'diyabad.
Yeah,
but this is not b'shishim. I think that's the difference.
It's not b'shishim. So what makes the shishim nice is that I don't taste it, right?
I think.
But you're definitely eating it.
The 49% is stirring me up.
Okay, fine. But that's the rule for rov. So that's the rule for rov. That's the rule for bittel, though. Bittel, original bittel is rov.
Yeah, okay.
actually the only one I understand is the Roche, because it's the, it is, if there's Bitul, it's a yes-no, right? It's 0 or 1.
Right. He's the one who's, I guess you would say, the least in the Chiddush.
What is this?
Yeah. He doesn't. You're right. He's the only one that doesn't make up something new. He's the only one who doesn't make up something new.
I close my eyes and then I will.
I agree with you. The Rush is the only one who doesn't make up for anything. He doesn't make up anything new. He's unapologetic. He just says, "Bittel is bittel."
Not a hair.
Bittel Barov. That's what's happening over here. Bittel Barov. Yeah. He says something is bittel. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
It's mutter. The Rashba makes up something new. He says we look at each one as a micro act. I'm eating this piece right now. And since it's batel in general, so this piece is mutter. Everybody agrees that this piece is mutter. All right? The trick is that when I get to the end, I say the last piece, I say that the piece that I ate before was also that this one is mutter. That's the, it's a chiddush that the Rashba makes up, right? And the Tosos also makes up a chiddush. He says, we're going to divide it up amongst people.
Taking it as a symbol, I think. Now he says that this piece we take away.
Explaining that's Rashi. That's Rashi.
Yeah,
Rashi says,
Rashi.
One piece we take off, we put to the side.
Explain
the benefit of Rashi is that he's the only one who actually has us doing anything about it. The bad part is that, what does this piece have to do with anything? We don't know which piece.
Explain again how Tosfos Ashita makes sense, that the fact that different people are reading
it. We don't want one person eating all the pieces, because how could you say that one person, right?
That person definitely ate something trade.
Right.
But so if you divide it among three people, one of the people he ate definitely is something trade.
Yeah, but that bothers us less.
I understand. And if there's a suffix, if there's a rov or not, are you allowed to eat it?
If there's a suffix, if there's a rov.
Suffix
of a rov. Is it daraisa? So no. Is it darabanan? Then yes.
But what is it here? Now we don't know. Now
We know how many pieces there
were. Now we know it's rov.
Yeah. We know it's rov.
And if we don't know it's rov?
Then if it's an Issur D'oraisa, so then you can't.
You can't.
It, then you can't.
You can't eat even one. That means.
Okay.
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 So it's just.
So let's see how it falls out of the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. Let's do that, and then we can go to Marv. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows: Chaticha she'ina royal iskabed shenis arva b'achiros min b'mino yavish b'yavish. That means that it's min b'mino. It's pieces of kosher chicken with pieces of non kosher chicken, and they're mixed up, not in like a stew, just mixed up on the plate. Dainu shein nivlal.
They're not. It's both of them. Also yavesh and also min b'mino.
Yes. V'ha'iser omid ba'atzma elishin is arev ve'eno makiro. You can't identify it. Chad betray batel. One with two batel. Muter la'ochlan adam echad. Kol achad b'fnei atzma. Who's that? That's the Rashba. Right. That's straight up Rashba. You can eat one piece at a time.
Chad betray means
one and two. One 50%. Whatever, it's not 50%, it's 33%. But
it's 33%.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a separate machlokes.
One of this and two of the other.
Yeah, yeah. V'yeish mi sha'osel ochlam adam echad, afilu zachar zeh, right, that's Tosos. And the Ramah says, v'chein yesh linhog lechatchila. Says the best thing is to make sure that two different people eat the food. V'yeish machmir nashlich echad oliten enu yehudi, who's that? That's Rashi. He quotes as Hagos Shari Dura B'Shem Maharam V'Rashi Ve'inu Ala Chumar Ba'alma. Doesn't buy that one. He says at that point there's just a Chumar, you're not doing anything, you're not accomplishing anything. V'chol Zeshen is Arev B'mino Ava Shalo B'mino Ve'inu Makiro Afilu Yavish B'Yavish Tzarech Shishim. But once it's Eino B'mino, so then you need Shishim, because there when it's Eino B'mino you're going to taste the Isser. You're going to notice it because you taste it. It's not the same. In terms of whether or not it's mutter. Now the next one, yavish b'yavish. Why did I bring this one? Yavish b'yavish in isbatel b'chad betray in bishlon kulan ke'achad. Okay, so this is when it's not yavish b'yavish anymore. They got cooked together. Afilu, excuse me, le'achal kol achad b'fnei atzmo aser im ein sham shishim. He says once they get cooked together. Is this min b'mino? No, this is min b'sheno probably. Yesh arotev benosin tam benivla b'chatichos. Oh no, this is the rotev. Okay. So what happened over here? This is min b'mino in terms of the meat. This is where we're getting really complicated. We're not prepared for this really, but we'll just say it outside. So you have a stew, and then you start throwing in kosher chicken and non-kosher chicken. Now, if the kosher chicken and the non-kosher chicken were just together by themselves, even if you cook them together somehow, right? So then, that would be called just straight up min b'mino. We go bittel b'rov. But the moment that you put it into the water to be cooked, what happens?
You part taste one or the other.
Right. You start to have other tastes that go into the water. Now the water has a taste. Yeah, or you put vegetables in there, right? Now the vegetables became usher because there's treif chicken that contacts with the vegetables and it's not batal. And then the vegetables don't go in. Right? Now you have a problem. Now you really need shishim. Because the rotev becomes, takes on that flavor and it imparts its own flavor and then goes back into the food. So here's the trick though. If you want to cook it together and there's not yet shishim, what you are allowed to do is you are allowed to pour in more kosher food in order to cause the bittul. You're not allowed to start the cooking process l'chatchila like that, but if you see that you have a problem, you can pour in more heter. However, the Yeshom of the Rama says the Im Noda Hatarovos Kodem Shisbashal Biyachad Hakol Shari the Ein Chozer V'Nasarin Biyachad Shisbatal Biyavish. This is what the Rush said before, okay? Which he quotes. What did the Rush say? The Rush said originally, he said, "What happens if you have kosher chicken and non-kosher chicken?" This is amazing. This is where, when I said, this is the ultimate halachic reality, okay? Because what happens over here? You have kosher chicken and non-kosher chicken together. All right? I'm preparing the food, okay? And Yechazkel handed me some chicken. I don't know anything about it. I don't know where this chicken comes from.
And I'm not very trustworthy.
Well, wait. Fine, you're not very trustworthy. You're not very trustworthy, or you're just not very good at this. So you give me a bunch of chicken. I put the chicken together. Mix them all up and make a chicken, whatever. Do whatever I just did you do with chicken. And then I drop it into the pot. And then Yechezkel comes back to me and he says, uh-oh, I went to Tiv Tam and I got some of the chicken there and I got the other chicken and Shuk Mahadrin. Ugh. We're messed, right? There's nothing we can do about that. Actually, there is something we can do about it, but the food is now not kosher. But what happens if I'm still in the process of mixing it all together? They're all mixed. I haven't thrown in the soup yet. And then Yechezkel comes over to me and says, I got half of it from Tiv Tam. Now, what do I have in front of me?
It's kosher.
What do I have in front of me? I have a taroves of min bimino, yavish b'yavish, which the Rush says, not only...
You can have it all.
Yeah, because heter, iser ne'apach leheter. Now, if I throw it into the soup, what happens?
Now everything is still good.
It's kosher. It all depends on when I found out. That's what the Rama says. Im no da hatarovos kodem shenisbashlu b'yachad, hakol shari de'in chozer v'nasar me'achar shenisbatlu b'shesh. B'yavish. That was the Rush's chiddush. That was what he was arguing about. Remember, originally he said.
For everyone to eat?
Yeah.
Also for the guy that knew?
Yeah, it's not, there's no iser. U'b'makom hef said, yesh lismoch adivra mekilin u'lahater. The Rama says, if this is going to be a big problem, you know, you're about to serve a big meal, you can be selling
it 100%. Before you put it in the pot, you say, it doesn't matter. You put it in the pot, it's okay.
What?
If that example, if he comes and he says there's a problem with your mixture,
you say,
nah, I'll put it in the pot. It'll be okay.
What do I mean by that?
Even before you put it in the pot.
So then it becomes mutter.
So it has to be in the pot already? Well,
even if no. If I find out about it before I throw it in the pot,
you don't know
then I'll have yavish b'yavish min b'mino.
It's
all mutter, as long as it's rov heter. It's all mutter. So and now when I throw it in the pot, it doesn't now become usser again. Even though, technically speaking, the isser should go into the water and into the vegetables and then come back out. That's how it's supposed to work. But because it became mutter, that was how far the Rush went with it. Now, there's two amazing things. Number one, that's how far the Rush went with it. And the Rama says that you can rely on this, b'makom hafsed. That's how far the Rush went with it, that it becomes mutter. But even more amazing is that this all depends on when I found out about it and my knowledge of it. It's the same objective meat.
What if we're cooking together and I realize my mistake, at what point I say, you know what, it's not a problem because it's not yavish, and you don't realize it.
That's a good question. I think the answer is that it's mutter. That's just the amazing part of here. What are we saying? We're saying that basically it's a tyrovis, but it's only a tyrovis once you realize it's a tyrovis. It's a mixture. Until you realize it's a mixture, it's not a mixture. It's amazing.
Is there any Orthodox rabbinic authority today that would use these?
Of course, this is the Rama. This is the Rama says, "Bamakom hefseid, you can rely on this." If you're in a restaurant and you're serving, you know, and you have to get your food out, and you're going to lose money, you're going to lose reputation, and you find that Yecheskel bread and chicken from Tim Tam.
I'm sorry.
But you know that it was only one batch, and the rest of the batches all came from Shuk Mahajan.
You
call the Mashkiach in, and the Mashkiach is going to say to you, I don't know what the Mashkiach is going to say to you, I have no idea. But if you ask me, the answer is, as long as nothing has been placed in the pots yet, it's all mutter.
I'll tell you what, in my house.
So I brought that to you at the table.
If you're a simple,
that's my question.
Would you eat it?
Yes.
Yeah, but hold on. The question is, this shouldn't make a difference. It's not two types of chicken. One of them is beef, and the other one is pork.
That's
and you can't tell. And you cannot tell the difference. Yeah. Externally,
mean b'mino, right? B'shem, b'tam. That's a separate machlokas. What defines things as being similar? Mm-hmm. It's a separate discussion.
Mm. Wow.
All right. Shkoyach, everyone.
Yeah, that was sensational stuff.
Thank you.
Shkoyach.